This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The legacy of civil war in Central America is playing out today in increased drug trade and a breakdown in law enforcement. It is a perfect breeding ground for gang violence. Women and children in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador are the main targets of the gangs. The rise in organized crime means an increase in kidnapping, extortion, and sexual violence. Seeing no alternatives, many of these women and children have fled to the U.S. to escape abuse and sexual violence in their home countries. More than 400 refugees are being held at a temporary detention center in New Mexico. Immigration law experts say the facility is inadequate and the legal process around their asylum claims unfair. A group of immigration attorneys from North Carolina traveled to the remote town of Artesia, New Mexico last month to represent some of the detainees held there. Two of them join us now. Evelyn Smallwood is an associate at Velasquez and Associates in Durham. Evelyn, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Also with us, Natalie Teague, the owner of Teague Immigration Law Service in Asheville. She joins us from WCQS. Hello, Natalie.
Thanks for having us.
Natalie, let me ask you, what made you want to get involved in this?
I think the question is not so much what made me get involved with it, but why would I not get involved in this? About 12 years ago, I backpacked through Guatemala for a summer, went on to become a Latin American Studies major at UNC Chapel Hill, have spent a lot of time in Mexico and Central America, and have seen how things have changed since, over 10 years ago when I was there. I am an immigration attorney and work with these clients, and as we saw what was coming up in the news about Artesia, it really became a matter of not why should I go, but why wouldn't I go?
Well, Evelyn, how did you find out about it? There has not been very much news about it.
Right. So we are all, we went to Artesia, New Mexico, Natalie and I, with two other immigration attorneys who work here in the Triangle, Joanna Gaugen and Allison Lukanich. And we are all members of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, which is a nationwide association that they actually were the ones who were sure to publish information about it to its members. So as the surge started happening from Central America over the summer, and as these women and children were coming through, and then it became clear that they were being taken to these facilities, then AILA, which is what the organization is called, stepped in, and then they began publishing information to its members. And so that was where we primarily got most of our information from the beginning.
Natalie, tell us about this facility in particular. It certainly wasn't built as a refugee asylum location. Tell us about it.
No, it certainly wasn't. There was actually a 2009 lawsuit by the ACLU making it wrong, illegal, unconstitutional, immoral, all kinds of words about to hold families in detention, specifically at the Hutto Detention Facility in Texas. And so since then, traditionally, or in the past 5 years, the government has not been detaining women and children. However, when the surge started to occur, ICE was tasked with setting up this facility that was supposed to be a temporary facility. And when you drive up to it, that's exactly what it looks like. Artesia is in the middle of the desert. It's 4 hours north of El Paso, 1 hour south of Roswell, New Mexico. And it's literally flat desert land with oil rigs and fracking going around it. And essentially the government brought in a bunch of trailers, poured some asphalt around it, filled it in with some gravel and put up a barbed wire fence, and there you go. Why not start holding women and children there?
At this point, we need to make a distinction now. Well, when we talk about immigration, anyone who comes across our border without documentation is seen initially as an undocumented alien. There is something called refugee status. You can apply for that, and in many cases, that would apply to women and children. So maybe you can kind of in lay terms for us, Evelyn, make that distinction for us.
Right. So basically what happens is whenever, as you said, whenever anybody enters the United States without documentation, then they could be subject to what is called expedited removal. And when Jay Johnson, who is the secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, talked about the surge and talked about the administration's plans on what to do with the women and children who are coming across, that's what he referenced, was that the government was going to be implementing expedited removal for those who were coming across our borders. What they failed to understand is that the majority of those people who are coming across, and particularly the vast majority, if not all, who are in Artesia, are coming seeking asylum. So once they come across and they're caught by Customs and Border Protection, and they begin this expedited removal process, once they acknowledge to Border Protection that they have a credible fear of persecution if they're returned to their country, then that's when this other kind of refugee asylum tract comes in. And so they're able to establish this credible fear with an asylum officer, and then they're given an opportunity to go before an immigration judge and to get that refugee status and asylum in the United States and ultimately permanent residency in the United States.
So legally, Natalie, what, again, and kind of in lay terms, what does that mean for me? I come across the border and I say, oh, I might be persecuted when I go back. That sounds like an easy way in. What's the process from that time forward? And what is a judge looking for that would validate that credible threat to your safety?
Sure. So when someone comes to any port of entry, it doesn't have to be the southern border. It could be JFK in New York. When someone comes to the port of entry and presents themselves to a Customs and Border Patrol official and says, I have a fear of persecution of returning to my country, if they are not from a contiguous country, so not from Mexico or Canada, under the TVRPA of 2008, which is the Trafficking Victims Reauthorization Protection Act, I believe. And so under that, there is an obligation for our government to bring every single person who claims to have a fear before an asylum officer. The asylum officer does what's called a credible fear interview. And in that credible fear interview, legally, the woman just has to prove, or the child has to prove, that they have more than a 10% chance of success in proving before an immigration judge that they could get asylum or some other legal relief here in the United States. And so if they pass the credible fear interview, they go on and are put into formal removal proceedings. Removal is the new word for deportation. And so once they go, and that triggers the entire immigration court process, which doesn't usually happen in detention. Hopefully folks are taken out of detention and are waiting, because nationwide there's an average of a 520-day wait from start to finish for an immigration court case to be concluded.
So, Evelyn, what are the legal challenges then? There is a legal process for adjudicating this. If you claim, and we see this upsurge in violence and gang violence, there are lots of reasons for it. Increased drug enforcement in South American countries have moved the drug trade. We know that's some of what's going on and causing the spike. But now that it's there, tell us about the conditions in Artesia for delivering any kind of legal services for the nearly, 500 women and children there.
Yes. Yeah, so it is. There are a number of challenges in Artesia. And I would say one of the greatest challenges, obviously, is that while there is an attorney who's on the ground, her name is Christina Brown, and she works through AILA and she coordinates all the volunteers, but that we are, the attorneys who are representing these women and children are volunteers. And so we are there for a temporary amount of time. Natalie and I and Joanna and Allison were there for a week. And that obviously is a challenge when you start talking about building a case for someone, to constantly having a new attorney rotating in and rotating out, which I would also add is re-traumatizing these women and children who have experienced extreme violence, because they are having to retell their story to their legal representation every time that representation changes. In addition, just the facility that we're given, it's very small. There is a very small workspace that we are allowed in, and also there's issues about confidentiality. Often these women are required to speak about these experiences that they've had with their attorneys in front of their small children, which include rape, which include murder, decapitations. And so obviously the women are often withholding necessary value information in an effort to protect their children.
Natalie, what are the conditions? I understand that that's even hard to make contact, that just trying to make an appointment and keeping that, having the appointment kept, is difficult. And then the ordinary process of gaining evidence is also hampered because of the rules of the facility. Tell us more about that, Natalie.
Sure. In terms of the appointments, there is something called the list that attorneys will put the client that they want to see on the list. But the problem is the immigration customs enforcement officials, their job is to bring to locate that person within the detention facility and bring them to the attorney trailer. The attorneys are not allowed to wander around the detention facility. And so it's often challenging because if for whatever reason ICE doesn't bring the client over, or if they were, if for some reason they forgot their alien registration number or something like that, you don't get to meet with a client that day. On one of the last days we were there, I had a client that I had requested twice that ICE forgot to bring 2 days in a row, and I did not get to see her before I left Artesia, which was incredibly difficult. So I think really one of the huge challenges is that, like Evelyn was saying a moment ago, Artesia is literally like a law firm with over 450 open cases, volunteer attorneys that are changing every week, and no support staff. And so it is incredibly difficult working circumstances.
I think just to add as well to what Natalie was saying, as far as your question with gathering evidence, Natalie had an experience with this where she had a client, and Natalie, you can obviously pick up with the story with it where it leaves off, but we were restricted in our ability to take pictures, which also affected our ability to represent them.
Thank you, Allison. I really, Evelyn. Oh my gosh, thank you, Evelyn. I really appreciate you reminding me. So there was a woman who I worked with who was a victim of domestic violence, and atrocious domestic violence, and she had several scars on her body. And what I had wanted to do was take pictures to present them at the credible fear interview with the asylum officer. And I spoke with the attorney on the ground, and she said, "Oh, just ask ICE, and they'll get permission, and then you can do it." So I asked ICE, and they said, "No, you actually have to submit a written request." And so then went through the process of submitting a written request. And long story short is Monday that I started the request on Monday, and by Friday I still had not had the request granted. The credible fear interview had come and gone, and that evidence was not part of the record.
Right. And if you're talking about bruises and that sort of thing, I mean, those obviously are pretty limited. And
right.
When
they
you
disappear.
That, they disappear. Evelyn, and then so in terms of the how usual is this? I mean, how normal is it? Again, you're in the country without documentation making a claim, and we have a process. Is it how regular is it to keep people in detention until their case is adjudicated? Do we do that for everybody?
No, we do not do that for everybody. And as a matter of fact, particularly once they have established a credible fear, and that credible fear has been determined by an asylum officer, typically they are allowed to be released. And typically, according to studies, they do go to court. You have to remember that these are women and children who their worst nightmare is to have to go back into their original to their country. And so when they're given a chance to have their claim heard, then they comply with what they need to do in order to take advantage of that opportunity. And typically what happens is if they have family members in the United States, particularly if they're documented, then they can be released to those people either with a bond. Usually it's a very nominal bond, especially when you're talking about a humanitarian form of relief. These are typically not people who have a lot of resources, or they're released on their own recognizance, which is basically a written promise to appear in court. And then their case is transferred to the jurisdiction where they are living, and then they're able to have their case heard in court. And again, as Natalie said, I believe it was over 500 days is the average waiting time in order to have your asylum claim heard, which is actually quite helpful when you think about the complexity of asylum cases and then the need to gather the evidence and expert witnesses and so forth. And especially if you're talking about getting evidence from, you know, a remote Central American country. And in Artesia, the opposite is happening, where they're actually fast tracking these cases. And so so it's also interfering with their ability to create a good and strong case. But I also will point out that of the 7 asylum cases that have gone all the way to a hearing in Artesia, 7 of those have been approved.
Well, what's happening to the others? And are some just being sent back pending these hearings? What else? What's happening to people who are still there?
So there, a lot of people who are there are actually starting to get out on bond. So initially, the cases were being heard by attorneys in Arlington, Virginia. And the ICE, so the government's position is that they should get no bond or they should get a high bond. I have an example of that where a woman that I represented who was there early on, who had her case heard before a judge in Virginia, she got a $20,000 bond, and so did her 5-year-old daughter. So that's $40,000 for them to leave. And to put that in perspective, I was reading about a case in Alabama where a man was charged with incest, sexual abuse, and second-degree rape, and he was given a $20,000 bond. And so those are there are those people who are there who have no bonds or have high bonds who are waiting for their cases to be heard. But then there are people who, now that the cases have been moved in front of other judges in Denver, they're starting to get bonds. Some as low as $1,500, $2,000, some as high as $8,000, $10,000. So depending on whether or not your family can pay for that, you remain there. Or you get out and you have your case transferred, or you get sent back. There are stories of women and children, even though they have valid asylum claims, they get sent back. And actually, Allison and Joanna, who are the other two women that we worked with, played a role in helping a woman who had a very strong asylum claim but had no family in the United States to be released to. She was actually on the plane ready to get on the list to get on the plane to get sent back, and they were able to intervene and get her off that list so that she could go forward with her case. But again, she will probably remain in detention that entire time.
We're talking with local attorneys who went to a detention center in Artesia, New Mexico, to help detainees there seeking refugee status in the United States. You're listening to that on The State of Things. Evelyn Smallwood and Natalie Teague are two of the four attorneys who took that trip. Natalie, how did you, when you all came together, how did you find each other? And I think it's pretty interesting to hear how you financed this trip.
So the four of us are all members of ALA, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, as Evelyn said. And then September, there was a meeting in Charlotte. All four of us went. We had lunch. We were all talking afterwards about how compelled we all felt to go, but didn't have any specific plans. And then somewhere, I think a couple weeks later, Allison, Evelyn, and Joanna, because they're all in the triangle, had decided that they wanted to go. They put together a GoFundMe fundraiser website and asked friends, family, and colleagues if they would contribute. And the response was completely amazing, so much so that then they invited me to join them from out here in the hinterlands of Asheville. And so I joined in and also asked my friends, families, and colleagues. And again, the response was absolutely phenomenal. And I have to say right now on the radio, thank you to all of you for contributing, because we couldn't have done this without you. We are all young female bilingual practitioners. Three of us are solo practitioners. We've all been licensed for 5 years or less. So it's a big deal to actually close down your office completely for an entire week and travel all the way across the country to provide pro bono legal representation for 12 hours a day in the detention facility, and then 5 to 6 hours at night doing legal research, writing in briefs, and getting about 3 hours of sleep, and then getting up and doing it all over again the next day.
I would also just add to that that I think that the way we funded it also made this trip very special to us and very special to the women, in the sense that we were able to sit across from them and explain to them that we were sorry about the atrocities that they had experienced in their countries. We were sorry about the way things had gone for them since coming to our country. But we were also able to look them in the eye and say, the only reason we are here is because there are 100 people in North Carolina who do not know you, but who care enough to give of their resources in order to allow you to have legal representation. And so that was very special.
And I'll piggyback on that and say that pretty much every time I shared that with every woman that I met with, and most of the time that literally brought the woman to tears. And the amount of gratitude and blessings that that the women shared was pretty phenomenal.
Planning to go back, Natalie?
Yes, and probably not immediately, but eventually, hopefully so.
Evelyn?
I do plan to go back. The word on the street is that they do not have very many volunteers right now for December. And so I'm trying to go back actually with some colleagues at my firm. But honestly, the goal of ALA and the desire that Natalie and Allison and Joanna and I all have is that it will be shut down, and so they will not need us to go back.
Got about 30 seconds left, but there is a lawsuit pending, right? Do you know about that? Is there a lawsuit, Natalie?
Yes, there is a lawsuit pending by one of the women who were there in Artesia. The conditions that they're complaining about is that their children are losing 10 to 20% of their body weight. There's something about the food that gives all the kids diarrhea. There's just all kinds of issues in terms of the sickness and all of the kids being sick, not receiving adequate medical treatment. And so for all of those reasons, there is a lawsuit pending.
I want to thank you both very deeply for being on the program and for your service. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Natalie Teague, the owner of the Teague Immigration Law Office in Asheville, talking to us from WCQS. Evelyn Smallwood is an associate at Velasquez and Associates in Durham. And you can read more about their experiences for North Carolina attorneys who traveled to Artesia at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we look at women in leadership roles and the power of partnership. Stay with us on The State of Things.